for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Pleb Underground, episode 75. It's dark in here, but this bar's not a dive. Price still pumping, feeling like a chief. Past the 49ers in the 50s, still brief. Don't spend money for nothing. Can't be in dire straits. Build something real, but recorded like the greats. Only hits, never misses. Stacking bits, forever kisses. Never lacking fits, represent rizzes. Pitch day hits, they present bizzes. Bring it together, flow, be great. Consolidate with a low fee rate. She ain't no second best, but you don't know what her name is. Each one quite fond, rest, look good in leggings and trainers. Be kind, not too nice, not an S-I-M-P. From behind, hit it twice, she's my L-I-M-P. Keep stacking the corn, grab a plate, eat up. Keep racking the plate until you can't get beat up. Keep hacking the gates, windows open, feet up. Keep smacking the hates, hashtag sign the waiver, meet up. Asics from Kaboom, they shot the mines. Never shot a gun, but I pop the nines. Forever not a ton, won't drop the tens. Not talking two fives, only guap in the lens. Off to Madeira soon, I just fly me. Slip past the corporates, each one slimy. I write each one, each of these forever by me. Immune to your influence, you can never buy me. Activate upgrades, we want a vault. But consider incentives, don't want to fault. Self-responsibility, culpa mea. Shitcoin sidechains like Citraea. It's enabled by BitVM, insert ZK rollup. Ossification gang, hashtag fix the filters. Hold up, hard money like hard water. There's some pollution, add white wine vinegar. That's descaling solution.
Absolutely awesome way to end that. That was a sick rhyme, Walton. Way to go. Guys, we are back, Pleb Underground, and joining us today, we have a fellow Bitcoiner that was actually a surprise guest in one of our spaces once upon a time, and he introduced something very interesting to us about Bitcoin, and we are going to dive right into it. That's right, guys. We've got Yuri joining us. Yuri, thank you very much for joining us on Pleb Underground.
Thank you for having me, Phil and Walton. It's an honor. And yes, let us dive into it.
Sweet. You said it, man. All right. We are moving on over to the numbers.
The numbers brought to us by Time Chain Stats and Time Chain Calendar. What do they look like this week, Phil?
At the time of this recording, the block height is... what is it? 831,017. The Bitcoin fiat exchange, 51,845.36. Total public lightning capacity. It's interesting, as the fiat exchange has gone up, the public lightning capacity has gone down. 4,710.BTC. Maybe some people are getting to close some of their channels. Who knows? Because the fee rate's a little bit down. Anyways, Moscow time. Look at us. Below 2K, 1928. Ugh. Anyways. All right, so fastest fee, we've got 14 sats per V by days to the halving. Look at that. We're, what is that, approximately 62 days? Pretty cool, pretty cool. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so Phil, I don't know how it's only 1928 in Moscow, because it's 1820 here in the UK, and I'm pretty sure they're more than an hour ahead. But, yeah, with under 9,000 blocks to the halving, estimated to be on 420, prices pumping, and what was the fee rate for moving transactions, Phil?
Oh, damn, I closed it already.
I missed that one.
Oh my bad.
Sorry. Like fees have been down. I think you're right. I might have closed one or two Lightning channels and put some stuff in more in cold storage. I think maybe there's a few people doing that. I don't know. I'm certainly not responsible for the big change there at all. But it's notable. Like as the price goes up, the dollar value on the Lightning network may still go up, even if the amount of Bitcoin goes down.
18 sats per byte, approximately.
Right, 18 sats per byte. I put a consolidation in like midweek at like 13 and got that through. So yeah, like I don't know. I like the numbers this week.
They're good. They're good. Hey Yuri, do you use Lightning? Did you have any channels up? Talk to us about what you're doing. What do you think?
Yes, I use Phoenix, but
Have you set up multiple Lightning channels or anything like that?
No, not yet.
I used to have a lot of channels up and running, and I had one up and running most recently for like maybe 3 or 4 months, and then I closed it. I don't know. It was at one point I had 36 Lightning channels up and running, and it was yeah.
Well, I think at one point I had like 20, like 21. I might have like, I don't know, like 11 right now or something like that. I don't know.
We were all very reckless. We were reckless before. A lot of people were reckless. But anyways,
I have tried to use Electrums, but then got some bugs there and then closed them. But sure, it's on my to-do list.
That's right. Get more Lightning channels up and running. And that goes for all of us. Well, maybe not you, yes. Walton. You're pretty good, but I got to get more Lightning channels up and running. All right, let's take a look at our first story for the numbers. Here we go. Normally, we have some kind of like fun numbers related stuff, but this week there was just a whole bunch of really crazy news that happened. So yeah, we're going to talk about this at least a little bit. Carol House testifies to the House Financial Service Committee on approaches to combat crypto crime and illicit activity. That's right, guys. The people who smugly said that the Then They Fight You stage is over and we've already won, this is what we've been saying. I mean, we're still at the beginning of this. We haven't seen anything yet. Let's take a look at this clip. Here we go. It's a clip that was shared by HODL Magoo.
So in the DeFi report that you mentioned, we highlighted lots of different types of technical features and compliance controls that can be built in at different layers of the ecosystem that could focus, for example, at the network layer where miners exist. A good place to start might be something like sanctions. OFAC has already stated in their compliance guidance that miners may already have sanction screening obligations. So a good place to start right now before imposing new AML obligations on miners or those who exist at the network layer could be to enforce the existing obligations when they validate transfers going to sanctioned actors like Lazarus.
Okay, before we go on to the next story, I just want to get your guys' thoughts on that. Did you hear that slip? Fork? Did you hear the fork slip? That was...
No, I missed that.
No, she's had it pretty quick. Instead of saying force, she said fork.
Oh, okay.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So, I mean, look, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I believe it was about a month ago or so. Well, probably around the time that the ETFs came out, there was some news going around about essentially miners having to disclose their locations and provide a whole bunch of KYC information in the U.S. So... this kind of falls in line, right? Hey, look at that. First, we ask you for all your info, and now we start talking about imposing, you know, a bunch of arbitrary regulation to combat the invisible boogeyman that doesn't really grow and thrive in our ecosystem.
I told you so, is what I have to say, yeah. Because I've been saying this for years, since Jason Lowry came on the scene. The whole point of Jason Lowry was to introduce the idea that Bitcoin mining is an issue for
national security.
Like of national security, a national security interest, right? And so the first step will be, oh, well, all the miners have to register, and then the government know where all the miners are, and then they can seize all the miners. I don't think Bitcoin's getting 6102'd, but Bitcoin mining might. And it's funny that she says the word fork, right? And I'm gonna quote Mr. Jihan Wu, who famously said to King Pleb, Mr. HODL, what's up, Steve? Fork your mother if you want to fork.
So the idea,
what are your thoughts on this?
So if I get your concern, the idea is that the government might seize all of the sudden all the mining power located in the US to then cause the fork, right? To something else to decharacterize the face bit. Well,
that could be an attempt.
The whole mining has been conceived to not make that so easy, right? So what is the percentage of miners who really have KYC? I don't know.
Well, that's the other thing, right? how many of them have KYC'd themselves? How many of them have provided or begun to provide this information? That's number one. Number two, how quickly can these miners relocate as well, right? I mean, we saw it with the China ban, right? I mean, you know, we saw all these miners go offline, and then all of a sudden, within a couple of months, we started to see an uptick, and we started to see them pop back online in Kazakhstan. So, I mean, would we assume... I would assume that these miners would either move to, because the closest regions, right, are going to be what? They're going to go to Canada or they're going to go to Mexico. I think they'd have a better chance with laws, and I could be wrong, but I'm just thinking about how Canada is. I think they'd have a better chance with laws in Mexico than they would in Canada. You know, Canada is much more in line with the U.S. So I don't know. What are your thoughts, Walton?
Harder to call the miners in Mexico than in Canada. Look, don't aircraft carriers have, aren't they nuclear powered? Just stick them all on an aircraft carrier and like drive around sea with, I mean, or maybe a nuclear sub. But then again, cooling must be a nightmare on one of those things. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder where the state will put all these miners eventually. Because, yeah, you don't want them too centralized, because then there's something that another military can take out. I think it's going to be interesting. I do think there will be, like, kinetic warfare to destroy mines in the next 10 years, whether that's between states or states on their own private citizens and businesses. Who knows? I don't know. It's going to be a fun game of battleships.
Either way, we're still, this is just the beginning of the then they fight you stage. That's all it is. All right, moving on to our next story here for the numbers. Here we go. This is something I think it's a little bit comical. Kind of caused a stir at the end of the week here on Bitcoin Twitter. Again, nothing to do with numbers, but very funny and entertaining. So here we go. Breaking. Elizabeth Warren signs a certificate to honor Bitcoin creator Satoshi Nakamoto with a ceremonial flag flying. Americans are forever grateful. Now, so look, there was a lot of, look at this. We've got the, we've got the readers adding context. So anyone can purchase a flag that has flown over the U.S. Capitol. U.S. Representative Jim Cooper said his website, like those of other members of Congress, has a link to the flag program. So guys, it's totally debunked, right? It's not like some like hardcore, you know, Bitcoin intern or something like that. Somebody just paid to have that done. And these people, they just auto sign. I know that nobody wants to maybe believe that, but I mean, come on, you know, like, does anybody actually think that Elizabeth Warren herself is consciously going to honor Satoshi Nakamoto when she spends a lot of her time arguing in Congress of how terrible Bitcoin is?
So I shared this theory on Good Morning Bitcoin. But I'm going to share it again. I say it's a theory, like it's a bit of a conspiracy theory. So our buddy Tarantula, friend of the show, Tarantula, is orange pilling people that have their own energy resources. And one of those groups of people are the population of Native Americans and their reservations, where they have these full mineral energy rights. And he's been teaching them to mine Bitcoin off these gas wells that maybe are even plugged up, because it's not economical to ship gas. So, but you can mine Bitcoin at source with them. So, the Native Americans are getting gradually orange pilled. And of course, Elizabeth Warren is like 1/16th Native American. And so maybe that's the connection.
Deep, Walton. This is very deep.
No, I think to be honest, like, well, that's what she said. But like, it's also I think probably I think it's probably just some intern that's gonna get fired, right?
For what? What's he gonna get fired for? Doing his job. Hey, I took the money and I made you sign the paper for the flag flying. Like, think about that. You know, but of course, okay, so maybe this person, this intern, will get fired because everyone's making fun of Elizabeth Warren. All right, Yuri, we know that you're not in the States, but what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Well, that reminds me of that meme of Futurama, the robot saying, "Ah, oh, now everything makes sense. Now everything fits, right, for the Native American thing." Yeah, why not? Well, if the goal was to prank her his or her boss, you know, yeah, that was a nice prank, I think. So good for him, yeah, or her, yeah.
I like the take about Futurama. Very nice, very nice. Guys, let us know what you think. Put it in the comments. Think that was like some hardcore Bitcoiner that paid for that? Who knows? Anyways, I mean like an intern. Let us know what you think. Guys, that wraps up the numbers. And we are going to move it on over to the Fireside Chat. The Fireside Chat is brought to you by BTC Pins. They've got awesome pins made by a fellow Bitcoiner. Check out my pin collection. Yes, that's right. Absolutely awesome pins. You get 5% off when you use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND at btcpins.com. Welcome back, everyone. We are diving into the Fireside Chat with our special guest, Yuri. And just to give some people some context, we essentially did a live spaces episode that we called the Great Scaling Debate, which we will link to in this episode and at the end of this episode in case you guys want to go back and listen to it. And while we were talking about Bitcoin scaling, Yuri joined us on the stage. And Yuri's a programmer, and he started to talk to us about this this concept called, I'm sorry, what is it? It's Lamport
scheme.
Lamport schemes, right? I just want to make sure I got that right. And essentially, he linked to us his GitHub, which I'm gonna pop this up because I want to give people some context. And of course, we're gonna provide a link to all of this material and Yuri's work for the people that are interested. So let's take a look at this, guys. This is LVBSIG, Lamport scheme based signature for Bitcoin Layer 1, we propose a hybrid key signature scheme consisting of a conventional signing scheme with irreputable signature and Lamport scheme. The benefit of it is a significant reduction of on-chain footprint as well, as will be demonstrated below. Okay, so most of our listeners.
I like that it says LVB, Phil, because yeah. I got slightly concerned that we got the wrong Yuri here, because somehow in his name it says Yuri SV. I'm like, wait, which Yuri have we got here today? Oh, no.
Don't worry.
Different one. We're good. We're good.
We didn't bring any Legos.
Does not stand for Satoshi Vision. No. It's my initials. Yes.
Don't worry about it. We brought no Legos. There's no ninjutsu here today. We're talking about Bitcoin.
Yuri, can you just start us off by telling us what is an unsigned integer?
Unsigned? An integer represented in a programming language that has no sign, right? When it overflows, it goes back to zero and not to a negative number, right? So what do you mean? To know if I am a
perfect
programmer.
That's
right?
Perfect. That's how we've proven that you're not part of the SV clan, because those guys don't know what unsigned integers are. So thank you for passing the little test there.
Okay.
Sir, please can you tell us about your scheme? Are you here to save Bitcoin? Are we gonna scale it perfectly? How does it all work?
Okay. So a little bit of my background, if you will. I am a mathematician by training, and then got a master's degree in computer science. I authored a public key crypto system based on the knapsack problem. It's a variant of the classic foundational public key encryption scheme all the way from the 70s, from the dawn of the technology, right? A Michael Hammond crypto system. And I have also recently authored another crypto system with signature scheme and encryption scheme. This one, last one, based on the hardness of factorization of polynomials in finite fields. This is, of course, very dense and mathematically complex. Anyway, I will provide you guys the references to all that. But anyway, back to LVBSIG and my proposition for Bitcoin. Well, So Lamport scheme is you take a block, a binary block, and then you hash it iteratively. And then you present the last component of this hash chain. And every time you want to refresh it, you start presenting the previous iteration of that. You can also look it up on Lamport scheme. I'll give you the reference too, sure. So when you talk about a signature scheme, as well as any crypto system, there are two properties you aim at that are, of course, conflicting, and you have to somehow accommodate them. So what you want to be done has to be done easily, computationally speaking, and what you want not to be done, not to happen, has to be computationally unfeasible. So the first thing you call completeness. So for a signature scheme to be complete, the legit issuing of a signature has to be easy, of course. And the verification of a legit signature has to be easy too. At the same time, the forging of a signature has to be unfeasible, computationally unfeasible, right? So those two things have to happen at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how, any questions now?
No, I'm learning. Okay. I'm listening and learning.
Cool. So the classical example is when you have in RSA, right? You have a crypto system based on the hardness of factorization of numbers. So multiplying is easy, whereas factorizing the product of two primes is very hard.
Right. So, for example, you can find, two. If you know two numbers, you can multiply them together. But like finding some large number that is co-prime, right? Mm. That only has two prime factors that each might be quite big numbers is very difficult to find.
Roughly speaking, in RSA, you have that the private key consists of two large primes, and multiplying is very easy. This is for a fact. Now, doing the reverse is hard. So what you make is you take the easy way and make it consist of the transition between private key to public key. So your public key is the thing that is easy to get, and the private key is the thing that is hard to get. So again, also in a crypto system, it has to be true that starting from your private key and then getting a correspondent public key has to be easy. So completeness always also means that to go from a private key to a public key has to be easy. And also for the soundness, it has to be the case that to come from a public key and then revert back to the private key has to be unfeasible. So those other two properties of completeness and soundness also have to be in place for your crypto system to make sense, right? Now, the trick I pull out in LVBSIG is how to use a chain of hashes to do that, right? Because again, the easy thing to do is to take a certain binary blob and then hash it. The hard thing is to the pre-image attack, right? How do you take this result, this digest, the result of the hashing, and then find the pre-image that was
that
the
led
input
to
the hash, to lead to that, exactly. Okay, but then the trick is how to use this for assigning, right? Because for assigning, again, okay, you take that. Let us dive into the diagram, shall we?
Diagrams always help.
Oh, yeah.
So here in that diagram for the crypto system, you have that. An address that KDFs into a private key, a conventional, normal private key, private key, of course, corresponds to a public key, then hashes into an address. This of course, is normal. What I'm proposing is this. You have a previous address. So this is why I have I many times here. This is an index. And then here I have I minus one, right?
Yeah.
So this would be a pre-image to that. And the premise is that we can have this happen a few times over. The point is, I will use this guy here. This
quick question: are you saying you can you can work out the private key from a Bitcoin address?
Yes. The point is, as long as I have enough entropy, right, enough quantity of random and secret bits. Okay. Now the point is, this guy here will be secret for the moment when this address, this other address, is under use. Okay. And I will reveal this as a way of signing. The trick is, if I reveal, how can I make sure that other people cannot use this then revealed address to sign other things, right? The soundness, right? Because again, it is complete insofar as when I reveal it, everybody can check that the signature is correct. But the time, the moment of review, of course, everybody else can then take this to issue signatures, and they are not supposed to. So how can I prevent that? Answer is, we use the property of the blockchain that, you know, you can never change it. You can never unbury blocks that are a few blocks deep in the blockchain, and make it so that in order to use this, you would have to unbury a few blocks to do that, okay? So what is the idea here? So you use that pre-image to hash that together with a transaction. This is, you have a plain text transaction here, TX, and then index I, okay. Then you hash it together with the address. You can also take salt and then borrow the nonces from recent blocks, okay? And then you can hard code with how many blocks deep those have to be. You get the point? Because again, those are a perfect salt. If you take nonces from recent blocks, okay? Is that clear what a salt is? Hello. Hey.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, salt is are bits that don't need to be secret. They only need to be unknown by an a rainbow table attacker by the time they were building the rainbow table. And by definition, nonces from recent blocks, they could not be known until the blocks were mined, because otherwise whoever knew them could take the free lunch, right? They could use them to effortlessly mine the signatures. Blocks, right? Huh?
I said, and create signatures.
No, no, no. I mean, no. Those I'm claiming that the perfect way to do this, the salting, is to take those bytes from nonces from recent blocks.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I missed a piece. I apologize.
No problem. No problem. So is that clear? So again, by definition, it's clear that nobody could know those nonces, because if anybody knew, they could effortlessly mine the respective blocks. So again, you take those as salt. And this is to strengthen that hashing against rainbow table. Okay.
Good. Okay.
Now, what do you get from this? You call this LVBC, right? The signature of that plaintext transaction is the hashing of that transaction plus a salt, okay, with this pre-image that you use as a signing key. Lamport signatures are also work by partially revealing private keys. The point is that the price you pay for this strength and convenience is it's a one-time only usage key in Lamport scheme. A Lamport signature, sorry, is the first proposed hash-based signature scheme, Okay, so the most basic type is Lamport signature, and then you sign by revealing part of your private key, the part that matters, right, for the signature. And then you revoke that key and stop using it because you could not use it anymore, right? Anyway, so here you have it. And then you, now, what is the problem with that? You cannot, it's, you know, this by itself is not yet, cannot be authenticated. Because in order to authenticate that, you have to reveal that. Mm-hmm. So that anybody else can then redo the hashing and see the so the signature makes sense, right? Mm. But the problem is, if you reveal, the moment you reveal that, anybody else could then change the transaction and redo some other signature and then sign something else. You see the point? Now, how do I square that circle? You see? And the answer is this. You sign a commitment with a conventional key, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you say this, look, miner, take that for me and bury that in your block for the late payment. I will give you an assurance that the signature will come in a few blocks time. If I fail to broadcast this pre-image here for pending authentication of this signature, I pay you a fine. So this is what I do here, okay? Mm-hmm. Here is a conventionally signed commitment establishing a fine if this user fails to broadcast the pre-image in a few blocks time. So if they succeed and do what is expected and what they promise, which is in fact to broadcast this in a few blocks time, everybody gets happy because then again, this transaction here for pending authentication gets in fact authenticated. So the miner of that gets their promised fee. The user gets their transaction mined, in fact, and everybody's happy. Now, if for any reason this pre-image fails to appear, to show up in a few blocks time, then the commitment is executed, is enforced, becomes mineable, and then a fine is paid, you see? And this is conventionally mined. The point is, this, of course, would be much worse. This would be a failure, a catastrophe for the user who owns the whole thing. And it's on the user's best interest not to have this outcome. Okay, so, but anyway, it has a clause establishing that this commitment is not mineable until a few blocks, so that the user has enough time to wait a few blocks and then broadcast this. So is that
the
clear?
Pre-image?
The pre-image, yes.
Mm-hmm. How can this scheme be attacked? Can it be attacked?
Hypothetically, yes, but then again, the all possible attacks are so difficult, are so difficult that they are actually unfeasible. Again, let us see that. So here you have all the explanation for all the notation. Mm-hmm. Here, if we look at commitment is a smart contract saying the miner of the LVB sig of this bundle here, mm-hmm, having the transaction plus the Lamport Villas-Boas signature, right? The miner of that gets a fee plus a fine. But this transaction is not mineable a few blocks later, this many blocks after this is mined. Okay, mm-hmm. So again, it's a promise. Look, miner, please have that for free for a moment. A few blocks later, I promise you that this will show up. And if I don't do that, if I don't show this guy up, then I'll pay you a fine. And this is how the miner trusts and accepts to mine this guy for free for the moment. Because he has a guarantee that eventually, very soon, this guy will show up and validate the sign, you see. So the point is, this is good because now what you have is a much lower, a much smaller footprint, because this is just a hash. It's not a public key plus a signature, a conventional signature, which is much more. You see?
Is this a bit like buy now, pay later? Is the user essentially almost financing their transaction payments in a code based debt agreement with the miner? Is that a good way of looking at it? Rather than paying for a transaction that you're putting through in this block, you're putting the transaction through but not paying the miner until later. Is that a correct understanding?
You are having your transaction mined for the late payment. The payment will happen in every.
That's what I mean. So you're paying
as
later.
As long as I provide that proof.
So buy now, pay later is something that certainly in the UK and I think the US as well. Like you have the idea of people are
stuff on layaway.
It's like 0% finance for a period of time or whatever it is. There's some delay on the actual real cost to the user, even though they're getting to do what they want to do with that money now.
I think I get what you mean, right? So is there any chance that the user can effectively augment their liquidity, right? Meaning make one Bitcoin worth more.
Is this kind of finance bloat kind of thing for the...
Yes, great question. Answer is no. No, it's not the case. Because again, the user can only use this key once. And then once he broadcasts the LVB6 signature, okay, it has to be the case that it will be signed. Either that or he will pay the fine. And they cannot, in any case, in any manner, proceed another transaction.
So this finance agreement is essentially pre-agreed and prepaid for the future. You've agreed to pay it in the future and you can't back out of that payment that happens in the future.
Yes. Essentially, it's frozen until either the deadline expires and the fine is charged, or the expected outcome, promised outcome happens and the pre-image shows up. So before that's frozen, any attempt otherwise would be a very transparent double spending attempt.
And this benefits the user because the transaction footprint is less, and so overall it costs less per user. Is that the right? Yeah.
Exactly. So here's the security analysis that Phil asked for. So here are the possible attacks, right? So again, first would be equivalent to do a pre-image attack. Again, unfeasible because it's as unfeasible as any pre-image attack on a strong hashing, as long as you have enough entropy. So again, and it's the case. So we have enough bits and unfeasible, so nothing to see here. Now, second is after you publish the LVB6 signature, okay, so here. Okay, so three attacks. First, before anything happens, to crack the all the way the pre-image observed, because again, that would be equivalent to a pre-image attack on a secure hash on enough entropy, so observed, nothing to see here. Second, after you publish LVB6, okay, so after you have that published, to somehow avail the fact that you have the public key here, to then do the pre-image with less steps. Again, absurd, because you have, again, that would be equivalent to finding the private key correspondence to that. Anyway. So anyway, you have to do to crack a cryptographically secure amount of bits. Again, still nothing to see here. And finally, when you finally release the pre-image, because then what you can do, or what would could try to do, is to perform a fork, right? To outmine the rest of the community. Meaning that would be by definition equivalent to a double spending attack. Okay, so then again, as long as you have enough blocks in advance, this is absurd too. Because again, plays into the doomsday scenario. It's as hard as performing a double spend attack. And again, if you fear that a double spend attack might be possible, so you should not be using Bitcoin in the first place, right? So a doomsday argument. By definition, we don't we rule out this possibility. So because we don't assume a double spend attack is possible, meaning to roll back a few blocks in Bitcoin is possible, then this too is impossible. So again, by the time you have broadcasted this guy and then this guy is mined, there's nothing else to worry about, okay? Because then by the time you broadcast this eventually gets mined, and then this transaction here gets authenticated, right? It was pending until this free image was released, okay? Yes. So this is how the things go.
Okay, so to the for the average user though, essentially, let's say this Lamport scheme gets implemented, right? Essentially, like, what benefits would they see? Would they see lower transaction costs? Does it also mean that I don't know, somehow the when they download that, does it mean like a smaller footprint for the blockchain as well?
Any
like, what does it mean to the end user in terms of, right? Like, essentially there's like the retail user and then there's the person who runs their own node. Like, do these people notice any of the benefits from the Lamport scheme?
Great. So again, the benefit is a much lower footprint. A typical vanilla transaction is approximately 130 and something bytes long. Okay, the signature plus public key alone. Now, if you take this Lamport scheme and then you send the address, sorry, you send the change of the transaction to the very address that you are using, right? You also economize on the change address. There is also that, but anyway, it's only one hash, okay? And then again, if you take an address that is 20 bytes long, it's much less. You see, it's 20 against 130 or something, so it's a dramatic reduction. And then again, you can of course choose to send the change address to somewhere else for privacy, because there is that, sure. And but even then, it's a dramatic reduction. The price you pay for it is you have to wait a few more blocks. Because then again, what is the soundness of this crypto system? The soundness before you have the key signed resides in the pre-image resistance of hash, right? So it's the signing of the soundness of the key itself. And after you broadcast, the soundness becomes the hardness of doing a double spending attack to fork to the blockchain. Then again, it means that the price you pay for this dramatic footprint reduction is to have your transaction take a few blocks to complete, to be validated, to be...
So the price you pay is a little bit more patience. But so that's good, because you know what? Bitcoiners are low time preference anyways. So I think that, you know, I think that the possible trade-offs, if, of course, if the benefits are worth it, right, to the user, then why not? So, Yuri, we are going to put links to your GitHub in the show notes, right? So people can go and check out the project. If people want to get in touch with you about the project, what is the best way to do that?
Well, that is Twitter, or now called X, right?
And it's Twitter.
Twitter. It's hard to talk with Twitter, right? X, come on, right? And yes. And you can email me to yuri.svb at PM.me, right? Then again, for the peace of mind of everybody watching, SVB does not stand for Satoshi Vision Bitcoin. It's my initials, my names, right? I was born with them.
We're going to add that. We're going to add that to the show notes. Yuri, we really appreciate you explaining this stuff. I mean, it is definitely for a lot of us, myself included, definitely over, at least over my head. But with Walton's help in dumbing it down, it made it so that I think everybody can get a really good grasp on what it is that you're doing. And we really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for having me.
We're not done yet. That was just the fireside chat. Now we're gonna move it. Yeah, absolutely, man. You got two more segments with us. We're gonna move it on over to Wrecked.
Up next, we have Wrecked, sponsored by Represent. Represent are a Bitcoin-owned clothing and accessories brand based in the United States of America. You can find garments almost as cool as the shirt that I'm wearing if you head over to representltd.com, and if you use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND, you will get a discount on all of the items. Once again, that's representltd.com. Welcome back to Wrecked. This week, a few stories for you. The first is, of course, some gaslighting from those in power to blame inflation on everyone else. Now, in fairness, I don't know if this guy knows that he recorded this, but President Houseplant did record this. So anyway, here's a little clip for you guys.
It's Super Bowl Sunday. If you're anything like me, you like to be surrounded by a snack or two while watching the big game. You know, when buying snacks for the game, you might have noticed one thing. Sports drinks bottles are smaller. A bag of chips has fewer chips, but they're still charging you just as much. And as an ice cream lover, what makes me the most angry is that ice cream cartons have actually shrunk in size, but not in price. I've had enough of what they call shrinkflation. It's a ripoff. Some companies are trying to pull a fast one by shrinking the products little by little and hoping you won't notice. Give me a break. The American public is tired of being played for suckers. I'm calling on companies to put a stop to this. Let's make sure businesses do the right thing now.
Yeah, so governments and central banks are shrinkflating your money, guys, and hoping that you won't notice. But you do notice that, all the companies have to shrinkflate the products and services that you get for those dollars. Nothing new here, guys. But what are your thoughts?
It's nice to see that they have extracurricular activities for the people in the old age homes. I think it's nice that they give them little, you know, acting lessons and stuff like that. You know, they get to do some role play.
Dude, it's so funny you say that, right?
What the fuck was that?
Isn't there like some dementia like poster in Russia that has Biden's face on it or something like that? Like,
I mean, are you kidding me? It's so sad because so many people fall for this bullshit. And this is something that I've come to learn about the human brain, right? Like, when we want something to kind of match with what we think, like, we'll just believe the dumbest shit. Okay. And don't get me wrong, the money printer scheme is not, it's very well orchestrated, right? It's very well orchestrated, it to the point where we can blame all these other institutions for all of the woes, but yet the government can sit there and be completely incompetent and greedy and print the money to infinity. And yet somehow it's the corporation, right, that essentially is trying to squeeze profits, right, by essentially, how could I say this, moving the goalposts in order to make the inflation not seem so insane. Like I and also still be able to make a profit. Because let's face it, at the end of the day, the point of a business is to make a profit. Right? Like you are trying to sell a good or service, right? For what you believe is good value for, you know, for you and the person buying the product. So, which is obviously not fucking happening when we're talking about governments, because there is no product. Okay. Unless you talk about us as taxpayers. So, anyways, talk about gaslighting, Walton. That's insane. Yuri, what are your thoughts?
Sure. Refusal to take responsibility or guilt is a trait of psychopaths, isn't it? And also blaming others for things that you know you did and caused. It's also a psychopathic trait. So, you know, what can you say?
I do like to say, though, that you shouldn't blame things on malice that you can blame on incompetence. And I don't think there's many fewer competent presidents in the world than President Houseplant.
I love that name, by the way.
Yeah.
Might have to make that the title of the episode. How President Houseplant is trying to destroy Bitcoin. No, I'm kidding.
It's difficult to like follow like that story, but I'm gonna try and pull up the next one here. Let's try and go like increasing wrecked this week. Okay, so Biden slightly wrecked because he's trying to lie and it's really obvious. Next most wrecked, the shitcoiner that was the first to block me on Bitcoin Twitter. She's really gross. Like, she's really gross.
So hold on a second.
Leah Heilpern, who 3 weeks ago, before the price pumped, bought some Rolex by the looks of that little logo down there, and her brother, who I'm pretty sure she seems to have like a weirdly sexual relationship with.
It's really weird.
Really weird. Said that he sold all his crypto and Bitcoin might get to 48k. I'm pretty sure we hit 52 a couple days ago, guys, and we're still above 51. So, yeah, we'll buy back in the next month or two and hold for the next year, whatever. Like wrecked. Shitcoiners and... buying shit they don't need to impress people they don't like, and selling their Bitcoin.
Yuri, you're actually writing code and building things, so you're probably not that familiar with these idiots. But do you know who these people are? Have you ever seen this brother and sister shilling couple?
No,
the Halperns, no. Crypto shills? No.
No, sorry.
No, that's why his brain works.
I'm a frugal man, that you can say.
That's why his brain works.
Well, that's good. Okay, so swiftly moving on. Up next.
Okay, but hold on. Before you move on, I just want to say she bought a Rolex with Bitcoin gains. Now, if that is not some... Now, again, teach their own, right? Teach their own. But that doesn't mean that we're not allowed to comment on it and make fun of it. I'm sorry, but that is some dumb shit. We literally have clocks and time all around us. Like, tell me... You're not insecure without telling me.
Look, if I can quote, if I can paraphrase a better watchmaker, you never own Bitcoin. You merely look after it for the next generation.
You only do what you say.
You don't own Bitcoin.
You merely look after it for the next generation. If you don't know this, it's the slogan of Patek Philippe, which is a better watchmaker than Rolex. But I'm gonna keep wearing my Apple Watch and for a while. I don't really understand. To me, it's like either have like some watch that actually helps you with fitness, or like some cheap Casio, or like you've got to go all the way. But I think you only go all the way once you've already bought all the houses and all the other stuff, and then really, if you really 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 want it, fine. But like, I don't know, buying some like flashy watch to impress some wanker on a golf course or like on a yacht or something in the hope that it's just gross. It's some fiat bullshit.
Yeah, it is.
Even worse, she's doing it to impress a bunch of simps on Twitter.
Yeah, I think the reason she blocked me was I think she was introducing her brother on Twitter, like, oh, here's my brother. And I said, what? So now he gets to see what a shitcoining simpfluencer that you actually are, or something. And maybe it was justified, but yeah, disgusting cat creatures, those lot. Yeah. All right, so up next,
I think Steve Jobs who rephrased that line that goes like a $50,000 watch tells the same time as a $50 watch, right?
That's exactly right.
Apple Watches are more like $500, but still, yeah. But the point
yeah, there's something the point else, stands. Right? It has some.
It is. It is. Like, I don't know. Like, it's my Apple Watch. People might hate Apple products, but my Apple Watch has helped me to get a lot fitter, and it's been to me quite revolutionary. All right. Anyway, up next on Wrecked, we have the biggest KYC exchange in the world. Coinbase getting wrecked by shitcoiners. I think this one's quite funny, actually. So here's a post from Reardon Code, who should be our guest next week on Pleb Underground, saying, ouch, UTXO management matters. Accepting tiny deposits on-chain is expensive. Hey, Coinbase, have you considered using the Lightning Network instead of losing millions of dollars? Let's just dive into this briefly. A post from Mononaut. Oh, and someone I've muted. Or some shitcoin, of course. So he says, since Magic Eden started using this address in early December 2023, Coinbase has paid 65.16 BTC to consolidate 183,743 inputs worth 140.3 Bitcoin. For 110,000 of those, approximately worth just over 12 Bitcoin, the fees paid actually exceeded the values of the inputs, leading to a dead loss of 34 Bitcoin. I'm going to click on this shitcoiner thing and hope I don't get like viruses on my computer. All right. I'm pretty sure Magic Eden has pulled one of the most hilarious finesse moves on Coinbase that they've ever seen. For every marketplace purchase on Magic Eden, they include a tiny output for the marketplace fee. These are typically tiny outputs. 1,000 sats, 2,000 sats, a pain in the butt to consolidate it someday. Each of these costs money to spend. But the genius move is that they, instead of using their own address to receive these UTXOs, they're using the Coinbase account address. And so all of these deposits get credited to Magic Eden's Coinbase account, and Coinbase is responsible for paying the fees to consolidate them. And of course, Coinbase is too big and clunky to really have a clue of what's going on, and they're not being smart about it. So, I think it's kind of poetic. It's like big KYC exchange that sells a bunch of shitcoins is getting
rugged by the shitcoiners.
I was trying not to say the word raped, and I'm like, I don't know what better word is here. Like financially raped by some shitcoiners who are taking advantage of the system. But what's the bigger point here is that, like, when there are vulnerabilities in some sort of system, people will try and exploit them to their own benefit, right? And if you don't have a good system that has aligned incentives, you can't just wish that your actors are gonna, that the people you're interacting with are gonna work in a way that benefits you. Bitcoin is, of course, a system where incentives do align, and shitcoins where they don't, gentlemen.
So Yuri, are you minting ordinals? No.
No.
What are your thoughts on this with Coinbase? Does it sound like they should have implemented Lightning? It definitely sounds, at the very least, like they should have been doing some UTXO management.
Yes, definitely, and avoid the exploits for that we saw. Sure. Mm-hmm. But definitely, Lightning would be a good call for them.
You know, Brian Armstrong, I believe 2 years ago, Bitcoin Time screws me up, but it almost seems like it was about 2 years ago that he said they were going to look into enabling Lightning, and that has never come about. But to Walton's point, I think that this is totally poetic justice. I think it's if nothing else, hopefully it teaches them that they are not all powerful. I'm talking about Coinbase, and that they too, you know, contrary to their beliefs, so it seems, they actually need to get to know Bitcoin a little bit better. it's just kind of funny that this happened with ordinals, though. You know, I don't know. I think that this is like, look, you know, Bitcoin, its ecosystem isn't really designed for grifting. And again, I'm not saying it's not designed for greed. It's totally greed incentivized. But this, I mean, look at what just happened, right? These grifters just kind of created a very interesting type of attack where they got to pick up all the fees. and let Coinbase pay the tab. So it's, I don't know. It's pretty clever, I gotta say.
Okay.
I don't mean to take their side on it, but it's funny.
I know. It's poetic. It's poetic. There is one final story for the week, and I feel like I decided to end with this one because it's the one I'm kind of the most pleased about. Can you guess what it is?
I'm hoping it has to do with our favorite Lego Maniac.
So here's some tweets from Artie Van Pelt. Arthur Van Pelt.
Nice.
Yeah, of course. We're looking into Yuri SV. I mean, Bitcoin SV's creator, Craig. Craig. oh dear.
So,
my understanding is he's getting absolutely destroyed in the COPPA trial, and has lied so profusely over the years, and perhaps in this trial as well, that he's being asked by the lawyers, but also the judge, about like how Bitcoin works line by line. Of course, I referenced this earlier in the episode when I asked our guest about what is a unsigned integer. Of course, he explained it's a number that doesn't have a positive or negative symbol. Dr. Craig Wright, PhD's nuts, didn't know like any of this stuff. Why? Because he didn't make Bitcoin, right? Did he? And his con is his really, really catching up to him. Yeah.
What is he a doctor on? Because if he doesn't know what an unsigned integer is.
What is he not a doctor of? That's the real question.
Yeah.
He's a doctor of documents.
Okay.
Sorry, my bad joke. No, I'm kidding. Oh. Okay, it's because they have all these fake documents, these forged documents. So I'm saying he's a doctor.
I've got the fun doctor.
Yeah. I think he invented electricity, as far as I understand it. Back in 1542, and
He also got access to the original C++ code before it was released as well. So.
Yeah, and he also like he writes everything on paper that didn't exist until a later point because he's he's best friends with the people that make the paper, and he owns all the Bitcoin, including all the Bitcoin that people lose on boating accidents because he owns the ocean.
You were asking, what is he a doctor of?
okay.
Right. I mean, take your pick.
Yeah.
Okay. Take your pick. No.
A doctor of doctoring documents is quite a good answer there, maybe.
No.
Except in his own words, if he was a fraud, then his fraud attempts wouldn't be caught, and so therefore anything that comes out as if he is a fraud, well, that can't have been him because he would have got away with it. I'm hoping this really really is the kind of the end of Craig, and I mean, there was a leaked email, right, from Calvin Ayer, the billionaire pedophile that's paying all the lawyers, to say he's not going to be paying any more lawyers for Craig. Poetically, hopefully, it means that Craig will actually get bankrupted, just like he threatened to do to all of the developers telling the truth against him.
Well said.
And so actually, it seems like Wrecked had more poetry than the intro this week. Sorry, guys.
That's okay. That's okay, dude. It was an awesome, awesome intro rhyme, awesome Wrecked segment. And yeah, that's right, guys. That wraps up Wrecked. And we're going to move it on over to the Hopium.
The Hopium.
The Hopium is brought to you by CypherSafe. Check them out at cyphersafe.io, making amazing products for Bitcoiners, such as the Cypher Grid. You've got to store your seed, and it's got to be safe. Comes with this awesome little punch tool. Check it out at cyphersafe.io. Also from CypherSafe, check out the Bitcoin Relo Triangle. That's right, guys. 16 ounces of solid titanium, a beautifully carved Bitcoin logo that is in the Bitcoin Relo Triangle at cyphersafe.io. All right, so here we go. We've got this tweet from, I guess that's Ghost of Greek Hoddle. Everybody's changing all of their names to this weird nonsensical lettering, and this makes it so much more fun reading the names. Anyways, so ladies and gentlemen, I present you the new BSV Cult Narrative. Walton, I know you covered some BSV Cult Narrative stuff in the in Wrecked, but this is some new shit, and I do think it's hopium because it is absolutely hilarious. Here we go. Bitcoin hoarder, if they have enough power to put laser eyes on Joe Biden, that's right, guys, we have enough power to put laser eyes on Joe Biden, they have enough power to hide the identity of Satoshi Nakamoto and even kill Bitcoin BSV. Be careful.
Lol.
I educate, invest in BSV, but remember what I'm up against. Okay. Oh God. All right, guys. All right. So hold on. Before we move on to the rest of this, let's address some stuff. Okay. First of all, the Biden laser eyes meme has to do with Dark Brandon. Okay. It's the Dark Brandon meme. This was Joe Biden's staffers. Okay. That thought that this would be like a really great and effective meme, which to a certain extent, here we are discussing it because of, you know, the BSV shitcoiners, but nonetheless, it obviously somewhat worked. Now, I've been learning a lot about the BSV conspiracy since this trial started. And a lot of the people there seem to believe that how could I say this? That like somehow the US government is totally tied up in Bitcoin and is all and MasterCard and Jack Dorsey and all of these companies like Visa, they're all ganging up to stop the real Bitcoin. Like, okay, that is completely insane bullshit. Okay, number one. Number two, okay, Craig is the aggressor. And this is what you guys, for whatever reason, you've chosen to omit history and pretend that it doesn't exist. And the last point I want to make on this particular story, it actually has to do with, I read this week that supposedly, and this was the funniest thing I read because I was actually there during and at the beginning of the Lightning Trust chain, BSVers have claimed that the Lightning Trust chain was a defamation act led by Jack Dorsey. This is the funniest shit. Of course, to defame BSV. Jack Dorsey received a Lightning payment and then sent a Lightning payment. Literally, that's all he did. And the only reason anybody mentioned him is because he is somewhat of a financial celebrity, so to speak. It's really what it is. Like this, I feel so bad for the people that bought into this BSV narrative. It's they are completely fucking lost. Anyways, your comments before we move on.
Yeah, two things. So you know how like in some religions, saying the name of God can be, you know, it's taking the Lord's name in vain. You're not meant to like use speech. I think maybe if you're using Bitcoin and you're not a BSVer, maybe then you're taking you're blaspheming against Craig and so what was the word he used?
Defamation,
right? You're defaming him because you're using Bitcoin without giving praise to Craig. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, how Yellow, I feel like Yellow says the word Greg and Craig exactly the same. It's like, yes, Somewhere in between the two. And so all I have to say is, fuck you, Greg.
All right, Yuri, I don't know how much you follow the BSV noise. I've actually started to tune in to the trial. Mm-hmm. So let me know, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, what can I say? I don't follow much, right? What can I say is, by definition, Bitcoin is the one chain having the most proof of work, period. So I don't really care about the others. Yes,
exactly. So, mm-hmm. Totally agreed. Okay, moving on from that. Yeah, that's right. The reason why I think it's hopium is because I think these people are totally freaking lost and they're coping. So I think it's funny. All right. And here we go. This is, to me, the big piece of hopium, guys. Don't let them fool you, okay? Don't let them fool you into thinking it's the banks that own all of the Bitcoin, okay? Like, remember, the echo chamber and the noise that institutions make can seem much bigger than their footprint. This is a great tweet provided by Alex Leishman, who we've had on the show. And it's by river. And it's the Bitcoin ownership distribution. Take a look at that, guys. Now, I'm pretty sure you can guess what I think is super important, right? It's right here. It's right here. That's right, guys. 81.7 to 130 million individuals, right? Like, take a look at that. It's mostly held, right? Like, most of the Bitcoin is being held by individuals. This is kind of the point. Okay, so
does that include funds on exchanges? Because I don't see exchanges
on
there.
Funds are right here.
Funds. I know, but I mean, of the individuals, I think a bunch of them, those actually have their coins on exchanges, and so I think there's some weird stuff going on there. One thing I did notice from this: who the hell is Patoshi?
I don't know. Who is Patoshi?
I never heard that before.
I never heard that either. Did they just make that up? I don't know. Either way, my point is, don't get lost in the noise, all right? Making you think that, like, all of these institutions are co-opting Bitcoin and they own everything. This was the beauty of Bitcoin all along. They have much less power over this network than most people think. And what's going to happen is that reality is going to begin to prove that. And I think that little chart is a good representation of that reality. But to Walton's point, we don't know how much of that the individuals is held on exchanges, and that, right, that is obviously not good, because if you don't take self-custody, the exchange actually owns your Bitcoin, and unfortunately, you only find that out when it's too late. Anyways, your thoughts, gents?
Yes, it really is a white pill, taking that caveat into consideration to make a self-serving comment. My work, other than LVBSIG, mostly concerns improving and facilitating secure self-custody. I have an ongoing project regarding coercion resistance, which I also think is an important issue to bring about and debate and expand on, right? In my opinion, of course, this is subject for hopefully future interactions around participations. Thank you in advance. And anyway, in my opinion, our community is overly reliant on obscurity. Obscurity is the jargon for a method that is secret. And if the method gets to be known by adversary, it fails. And to this point, we are tends to, I think, overly use obscurity. And anyway, I have projects, monetizable one, by the way, on that, and I'd be happy to bring that about in future interactions. Sure.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Walton, you have any comments on this stuff before we wrap up the Hopium?
Yeah, I never liked the numbers of, like, or how they come to these numbers of individuals that own Bitcoin, because you don't know.
Not enough nuance.
You don't know how many separate addresses are owned by individuals. You don't know how many. Like, people keep their stuff on exchanges unless you know, like, the numbers of exchange clients. I don't know. It's
this is why it's opium, you know?
Yeah. One thing I heard is that, like, there are the exchange balances are decreasing. That's some opium.
That's a good thing, I guess, effectively.
Yeah. But ETF balance is going up. I don't know. Probably.
Supposedly they are, right? We keep seeing all these inflows, right? Keep seeing all these inflows, and BlackRock's iBit is apparently doing very, very well. So, yeah, I guess we could.
Don't care, never selling.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't matter. I mean, we cover it during the week on clips here and there. You know, I'll bring up some of the ETF shit. You know, what's really sad is that a lot of people still want to hear about it. Like, because its number go up. Anyways, whatever. It's okay. We're humans. We suck. We do get better, though. We do get better. Time makes us better, I guess. Anyways, guys, let us know what you think. That wraps up the show. Put it in the comments. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Help us grow the channel. Yuri, one last time. How can the viewers and listeners find you?
On my Twitter handle, Yuri Villas-Boas, the link will be here in the description. email yuri.svb@pm.me. And for your peace of mind, SVB does not stand for Satoshi Vision Bitcoin. It's my initials. And also, of course, on GitHub, yes, you can check out my other projects, including that one on coercion resistance that I mentioned. Thank you.
Very cool, man. Yeah, again, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We definitely want to have you back on to discuss the other projects that you're working on. And all of those contact details will be in the show notes. Guys, don't forget to check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. If you want to stream us sats, check us out on Fountain.fm. You can stream us sats through Breeze.
Walton. I love it. Every time. Guys, please head on down to fuckshitcoins.com, like and subscribe, and we will see you next week. Thank you. More toxic than the most toxic Bitcoin maxi ever. They said he's more toxic. More toxic than the most toxic Bitcoin maxi ever.